Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been following their curiosity and are committed to innovating how and what they brew. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
This is Sound Opinions, and time now to remember one of music's most innovative artists.
Look up here, I'm in heaven. I've got scars that can't be seen. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now.
That is a little bit of the song Lazarus, Greg, from what is now David Bowie's last album, Black Star. It was released on January 8th, the day he turned 69, and the iconic rock star died on January 10th, apparently after a long battle with cancer that very few people knew about. Iconic career, we're going to get into that throughout this show. We consider him one of rock's greats, and so we're devoting the show to him. Survived by his wife of 25 years, the supermodel Iman. They had a 15-year-old daughter. He'd been famously married to Angie Bowie in the 70s, with whom he has an older son. She, of course, was immortalized in song by the Rolling Stones. Much of his life has been immortalized in song.
Yes, Jim, Bowie was a tremendous musical innovator, a musician, songwriter, actor, multimedia artist, sexual revolutionary. We're dedicating this show to him. Many have called him the first postmodern rock star. And we want to look at this tremendous career that he's had over the decades, looking at some of the key moments, the key songs from that career. And we talked to his longtime producer, Tony Visconti, in 2008 on Sound Opinions. Here's Visconti from that interview talking about meeting David Bowie.
My boss said, you seem to have an ability to work with these odd musicians. So I've got another one for you. And he played David Bowie's first album that he made for DRAM, I think The World of David Bowie, mm-hmm. It was called. And I heard this kind of lovely, I don't know what you'd describe his voice. It was thin in those days. It didn't have the sonority it has now. And he was writing stuff that was all over the place. He was trying to sound like Anthony Newley on a few tracks. Yeah. But I like him very much. So David Platt says, well, he's in the next room. So all this was prearranged. And we got on really great. He loved things American. He loved a group called the Fugs. He loved Frank Zappa. And I love the Beatles. So we had a great bridge there. You know, we were talking about everything all at once. And I remember it was a beautiful day. It was probably late autumn. And we said, well, let's take a walk. So we walked out of Oxford Street and kept walking. And we must have walked miles and miles because we ended up in South Kensington on the King's Road. And I remember Knife in the Water was playing in this art film. And by then we established that we both liked scratchy black and white films. Didn't matter who made them, as long as they were scratchy and black and white. And they were foreign, you know, they were in French or Italian or in this case Polish. And we went to see A Knife in the Water by Roman Polanski. And that was how we spent our first day together. It was just amazing.
Wow. So Bowie was not, you know, at times in his career, especially early on, Bowie got this follower reputation. He is, of course, pop's great chameleon. But, I mean, you're saying already at age 20, he was rooted in underground sounds to the point where he could quote the Fugs at you?
Yes, he had everything in his collection. He had these records, too. Mm. But he didn't know what he wanted to do. And my job was to channel him. Like, we have to pick a genre, David, okay? What are we going to do? You know, what are we going to do on your first album? So David started writing these songs on the 12-string guitar, and he wrote them pretty quickly. And these are all the songs that are on the first album I produced with him, the Space Oddity album.
Yeah.
So we got him going in a direction. It wasn't the best direction. I mean, a lot of Bowie fans love that album, but I cringe when I hear it. It still wasn't right.
Really? I mean, Space Oddity is considered, one of those perfect songs, you know?
Well, I have to tell the Space Oddity story then. Mm-hmm. I didn't produce it.
Yeah.
Right.
That was the
I didn't
right.
like
you didn't do.
I didn't like it.
And how did you miss that boat?
I recorded most of the album. I rehearsed the album with the group. And at the 11th hour, and this is what he'll always do, and this is what he's traditionally done now since I've met him, he writes one of his best songs at the end of the album. Because the pressure, he needs to be hyped up, he needs to be pressurized to create, unlike other artists who like to go away to the countryside and write. He brings a song to me, and it's not folk rock. It's like nothing we've started to record or rehearsed. And also, I listened to it closely, and I said, David, you're stealing things. I said, Here Am I Sitting in a Tin Can, that's right off the Bookends album by Simon and Garfunkel. He was the ground control to Major Tom. He's putting on a John Lennon voice there, and there are like a few Beatles alliterations there. So I said, David, this is one big cheap shot. And that's the exact expression. And he looked at me very painfully, and he says, I know. He says, but the record company likes it. I was full of principles in those days. I was still hippie-ish. And I said, I can't do this. And he said, okay, what should I do? I go, well, Gus Dudgeon, who is my friend and an engineer that we used, his office was two doors away from mine. I said, Gus would probably do a great job on this. And when I heard it, I regretted it instantly. I thought he did a marvelous job, and I thought the song was great. Mm-hmm. The next time I saw David, I said, this is really great, and congratulations, and I think you and Gus should finish the album together. He goes, no, I got that over with. Let's you and I finish the album.
That's Tony Visconti talking about working with David Bowie on Sound Opinions in 2008. It's a great interview in our archives. As he said, he did not produce the song Space Oddity, but he worked on the album with Bowie. We've got to talk about that song, though, Greg, because it's the place that any discussion of Bowie has to start. Released in July 1969, the same month that human beings first walked on the moon with Apollo 11. What is great about this song? My friend Glenn Kenny, who's a film critic for VanityFair.com, wrote a wonderful piece about Bowie the actor. And he said there is no difference between Bowie the actor and Bowie the musician. And what I love about this, it's a one song, catchy single, entire rock opera in the sense of playing different roles. Ground control, talking to Major Tom. Major Tom's circuit's dead. He's lost, right? He doesn't know where he's going. This is a heck of a thing to say when we don't yet know that the three men who we sent up into space are coming back, right? We didn't know what was going to happen when they landed on the moon. You've already used the word innovator twice, though, and I don't think that's Bowie's strength. We've tussled about this at various episodes of Sound Opinions. I think he's a synthesist. I think he heard things that were going on in the underground. He was particularly influenced by Pink Floyd and tracks like Interstellar Overdrive. He covered Syd Barrett famously. He knew about Hawkwind and their space operas. I think he was taking the space sci-fi art rock thing and putting it into the mode that he knew best. Remember, he'd been a struggling folkie somewhere between Dylan and Donovan at the start of his career.
Smiling girls and rosy boys, come and buy my little toys. Monkeys made of gingerbread and sugar horses painted red.
Did not make a mark in the 60s, really. It was only at the tail end of the decade, 1969's halfway over, when he really comes on the map, and then he would epitomize the 70s. I think the roots of so much of what Bowie would do throughout his career can be found in this one song. So the place to start any discussion of David Bowie has got to be Space Oddity. Here it is on Sound Opinions.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition, and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know. Now it's time to
come to ground control. I'm stepping through the door. Stars look very different today. For here am I sitting in a tin can, far above the world. Planet Earth is blue, and there's nothing I can do.
That is Space Oddity, the title track from David Bowie's breakthrough album in 1969. Jim, the point made about the innovator, yes, we have tussled about this. I want to play a song next that illustrates that Bowie was indeed an innovator. This whole idea of postmodernism, collage, mixing and matching of styles, no one did it better than Bowie. Yes, he was infiltrating the underground, infiltrating different styles and influences to mine them for creativity, but at the same time combining them in very unique ways and also putting his own sensibility on top of them, and in many ways trumping some of the influences that he had in his music with his own sense of artistry. Life on Mars, to me, is an example of that artistry, a great track from what I consider his first masterpiece album, the 1971 Hunky Dory album. It was his fourth album. And I think he really found a sense of what he wanted to say and how he wanted to say on this particular record. You look at that album cover, and there's David Bowie looking very Marlena Dietrich on the cover. You know, he's got this old Hollywood movie pose on there. And he's sort of playing with some of these styles of music. In fact, Life on Mars was based on the melody of a French pop song that he himself had been playing around with.
Mama. T'as resté cheveux, presque malgré moi, comme d'habitude.
Paul Anka later bought the rights to that particular song and wrote My Way with it, which Frank Sinatra later famously recorded. Bowie was a little bit ticked off about that circumstance. He goes, wait a minute, I got to that song first. I'll show you what you can do with that particular set of chord changes. So he basically used the chord changes from My Way via this French pop song to create Life on Mars, and what a masterpiece it is. He's got Rick Wakeman playing keyboards on it. Him and Rick Wakeman, future keyboardist for Yes, used to bum around in London during those days. They were great pals.
The Mellotron that Wakeman added is all over those early Bowie records, and Bowie was really disappointed when Rick joined Yes. And left playing him.
That beautiful piano playing. I mean, Bowie originally wrote the song on piano, and Wakeman added his own embellishments, and then a beautiful string arrangement by another key collaborator for Bowie at the time, his guitar player, Mick Ronson. And then there's Bowie's vocal performance. He embodies this character, this girl with the mousy hair, watching this Western in a movie theater and just being just dumbstruck by the stupidity of it all. She says, I've seen this movie 10 times before. You know, they're presenting a vision of reality to me that I don't get at all. It has nothing to do with my life. This character wants to get out so desperately from the world she's living in. There's got to be a better world out there. Is there life on Mars? And Bowie himself was feeling that too. So you've got this incredibly acerbic set of verses in the song with this emotive chorus and this juxtaposition of those two moods. That is what Bowie did so well, blending these moods, these bittersweet feelings, and creating beautiful songs out of them. Life on Mars from David Bowie from 1971 on Sound Opinions.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mummy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a saddening bore,
past Orchard Brow that Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clowns. But the film is a sad thing for, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, as I ask you to vote for some sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the freakiest show. Take a look at the lawman beating up the wrong guy. Oh man, wonder if he'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on
Life on Mars from David Bowie's Hunky Dory album on Sound Opinions. We'll continue honoring musical legend David Bowie in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX, and we'll review his most recent and last album, Black Star, released just days before his death on his 69th birthday. Stay tuned.